In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. We spoke about the lunar wave with past guest Crow777, who, among others, had caught on video something that appears as a wavy horizontal line rippling from bottom to top on the face of the moon within a few seconds. Crow also referenced the marginalized work of a Russian researcher named Alexander Hadibo. Although there's no verification to this research and it could be disinformation, Hadibo had assessed that the moon is not an illuminated object and argued that the surface is luminous and creates light through the assistance of pyramids on the moon, the sun, and the earth. It is indeed easier subscribing to the idea that the sun's light waves are reflected off the surface of the moon. Additionally, Hadibo wrote about the life-affirming influence the moon has within what he terms the land management supersystem. Today, we look at the relationship the moon has with the earth and its waterways with returning guest Peter Champeau. His recently published book, Moon Rivers, a geographic exploration of Earth's primary rivers, explores through geometry of nature the moon's influence on the Earth's flowing waters. Geography is an emerging science defined as pattern study of the living Earth, and Peter Champeau identifies how the successful cultures of the past used this geometry in nature within the construction and layout of their communities. This 65-page book builds on Peter's earlier book titled Gaia Matrix, Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape, and identifies the moon rivers, such as the Nile River, the Congo, the Ganges, and more, that all share common dimensions. Peter Champeau's work brings the individual and community into relationship with our living planet. He's a geographer and earthkeeper. He's the discoverer of earth rings and the leading researcher in the field phenomena of ley lines, earth grids, and nature's geometries of scale. His website is geometryofplace.com. Peter, welcome back to Another News.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
In our past interviews, we mainly talked about ley lines, the magnetic lines that carry consciousness through specific areas on the planet, and how some have been harnessed by secret groups for good and the not so good. We've also got into the topic of how dark energy gets stuck within certain ley line, energy line vortexes. And you mentioned that ley lines orient themselves to sun cycles. In your new book, Moon Rivers, A Geographic Exploration of Earth's Primary Rivers, you focus in on the waterways. Can you talk about the significance of this distinction?
Yeah, I could talk for hours on it. Well, let's just inform the listeners that geography, or this geographic worldview, is the view of the Earth as a living being, and we look for patterns of life within the living being. So that's really my work. And ley lines that you mentioned, we spoke of before, they're like human acupuncture meridians, where like electrical charges of chi flow and course through our systems that enliven various organ systems. And you can look at the Earth. I look at the Earth humans are in the image and likeness of the Earth. So I look for patterns where similar types of biological patterns emerge out of the planet's surface. And the ley lines, so one interesting fellow that's been working ley lines lately is Pope Francis. He came over here those Jesuits, they really know their stuff. Mm-hmm. Very strategically, went to Washington, D.C., Philly, and New York City, keying into that Western ley line, that ley line of civilization that stretches down the East Coast from Boston through New Haven and Yale, the Kingmaker School, and through New York City, Trenton, Philly, Baltimore, Washington, and that continues on down through Atlanta and Mexico City. So that's the ley line. A straight line of natural and cultural features. And by the Pope coming over here, he keyed into that Western consciousness to facilitate some raising of consciousness. And the same ley line, if you were to trace it over the pond, goes down through a lot of war zones through Europe and eventually ends up in Saudi Arabia. So there's this conversation, cross-world conversation going on with this particular ley.
And specifically, these rituals and masses and prayers being conducted.
Right. You know, when a ley line tend to coalesce and cohere certain activities, when there's a preponderance of these activities, it attracts more of the same activities. So by mass gatherings focused on love and prayer and compassion and kindness, that's overriding the greed matrix that we have in the eastern cities and the war matrix that is running through Europe. So this Pope really knows his stuff. I've been watching him go around the world, and he really seems to be keen on ley lines. It's almost like he reads my material, but... But moons, moon rivers would be considered the Earth's blood system, just like our rivers, our vascular system. The rivers of the world have this vascular system as well. And moon rivers sprung out of a recognition that there are all these major deltas right along the 30th parallel. And in exploring my work with Earth rings, which are, if you look at the planet as a whole, you see all these curvilinear shapes on the crust of the planet, like Mexico to California. It has a roughly radial feature to that, and you reference that radius, and it marks the center of the North American tectonic plate up here in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. And I'm seeing many of these around, you know, there's arcs of mountains that are referenced to these volcanic plugs at the center, creating these earth rings. And I noticed that there was multiple rings of the same dimension, these arcs on the planet. And they ended up being the same sizes as the interior of the planet. So there's this... this projection, this conversation between the interior of the planet and the rest of our planetary systems, because the spheres within inside the Earth, the generalized spheres, the density of these different outer mantle, inner mantle, correlate to Mars, for instance, in the outer mantle, and Pluto in the inner mantle, and then the mantle. Lithosphere boundary is the same size as Venus. So all these rings appear to project to the surface, like you see those mud bubbles that come up in Yellowstone, and they create this kind of radial form. And these interior radiuses have a specific geometry that's related to the Enneagram. The Enneagram's used in psychology, and it's a nine-sided structure, and you can nest four polygons within an Enneagram, and in each one of the centers that's generated by these polygons relate to the interior of the planet, and also relate to Stonehenge, relate to the Aztec calendar stone, and it also relates to the human eye. So when you look in someone's eye, you're really looking at this radius of consciousness that the Earth also has, that we see in the arrangement of the planets, that we see in the density of stars within our galaxy. So there's this visceral conversation that's happening between our consciousness and the solar system, which is going through space. In looking at these Earth rings, I noticed this 30th degree parallel north, where you have the Colorado River, the Mississippi River, the Nile River, the Tigris-Euphrates, Yangtze's, and Ganges all along this 30th parallel. got me going on, well, what's this all about? And it has to do with spin dynamics and the relationship of the moon because of I'll get to that in a second, but there's this Coriolis effect that happens in the subtropics because of the spin of the planet and the atmospheric spins that are generated by the Earth turning. It creates this Coriolis effect, which is between the equator and the 30th degree. So there's this suction, if you will, of water being drawn to these vortices. So the Mississippi River drainage is being drawn to these vortices as water wanting to bond to water. So, you know, we have this happening. And these moon rivers I coined, many of them are the size, you know, if you will, the radius of the Mississippi River from New Orleans to Lake Itasca is generally not exactly, but very close to being the size of the moon. And the fan of the moon, the fan of Mississippi River basin and drainage area, including Ohio River and the Missouri River, that generates a radial arc, which is the size of the moon. And if you take that arc and draw it into the landscape, it ends up down in New York City and goes up across through the Great Lakes, through Lake Itasca, through the Black Hills, down into Tetons and into the Four Corner area of the Southwest, and generating a very specific geometric pulse along this line where you have all these sites at equal distance. I became aware of that, and I started to look, well, what about the other rivers? And I found that there are many rivers on Earth that have that radius of the moon. Well, I was off and running, and which resulted in this book that I wrote called Moon Rivers, available on Amazon.
Is it available on your site, Geometry of Place?
We're undercutting Amazon, if you will, there on our site.
Great. Peter, you began to notice that there are other rivers with similar characteristics, and you went down a list of some of them. What are some more characteristics of these moon rivers?
Each one has its own unique culture that has thrived on its banks. Civilization, our fortune, Fortuna, the goddess of the moon, who governs the fates and fortunes of mankind, according to the Romans, was the goddess of the moon, and was also the goddess of rivers, because rivers are what spawn civilization. And one really good example of a moon river, of course, is the Nile River. That's the big one, with its length of 2,160 miles by the crow between the delta and source in Lake Victoria. Stretches between the 30th parallel north and the equator at Lake Victoria. Mm-hmm. And it's a flow that moves northward. As this river courses northward, it hits these various latitude plains. And these latitude plains, I started to look at these planes and saying, well, there's something here that relates to a chakra system within the planet. I've seen many studies of the Egyptian pyramid system or the Egyptian pyramid and temple system along the Nile relating to the body of a human, if you will, and the centers are all very much aligned and placed in concordance with the placement of a human chakra system. Mm-hmm. So they looked at it as a whole biology and tried to stimulate that biology in their ritual and ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
These systems, I started to look at rivers related to this idea that the Earth has a chakra system to it. And what I determined was the root chakra is the center of the Earth. where, you know, like your fire comes from, your power comes from, and then it comes out at the equator as the sacral chakra. So you have this, you know, like the Congo River has this this very you know, sexualized connotation, the hot and the steamy and incredible blossoming of life, and that's echoed over across the pond over to the Amazon River, which is also on the equator, exhibiting some of the same kind of sacral sexual power of the earth. And as you progress northward, it hits the 19.5 degree latitude. The Nile River has this kink in it, the Great Bend in the Nile River, and that's right on the 19.5 degree solar plexus line. 19.5 is, if you were to take the mantle and project that ring out to the surface, they would emerge on the 19.5. So we have, in this spin of our planet, we have on this latitude, a series of volcanoes, Mexico City and around Mexico City, the Hawaiian volcanoes, the Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines are on this volcanic ring, if you will. It's where the power of the earth, the solar plexus, emerge, where the first chakra emerges into an expression of power. The 19.5 latitude is something, it has to do with the spin dynamics of planetary structure, because we see the same 19.5 latitudes in the solar system, mm-hmm. expressed as these two rings, north and south, that are at 19.5, where the solar flares emerge out of the sun. And we see the same, the giant red spot on Jupiter also is on that 19.5, and other planets similarly have this kind of feature that comes out there. So that's the solar plexus. And well, if that's that, then the 30th must be the heart chakra. So when I say, well, of course, you know, all the rivers flow, you know, all our veins, all our vascular system flows towards the heart, you know.
Wow.
So that must be the heart center. So we have, you know, New Orleans is on the 30th parallel. So the expressions of New Orleans and, you know, show me your love, you know. It's,
oh, yeah, good point.
You know, it really plays through culturally. You know, the Great Pyramid is said to be at the heart of the world, where the two latitude longitude, it's the only place in the world where you get latitude longitude crossing the maximum amount of land. Any other place in the world does not cross that amount of land. So the placing the pyramid there really you know, allows it to tune the entire surface of the planet. And its dimension of 555 feet, I believe, is the average height of the planet surface. So from the Death Valley, you know, the depths of Death Valley to the heights of Mount Everest, if you were to average out all the land on the whole planet, mm-hmm. it ends up being the size of the Great Pyramid. So continuing on the conversation of the chakras, the next one is the throat chakra, and that I determined that to be the 44th parallel, just because it was where a lot of people that's where all the apparitions of Mary came through, you know, in Fatima and Lourdes, and it's also where the peacemaker, the founder of the Iroquois Confederacy, he's on the 44th parallel. Hmm. And you get the Grand Tetons on the 44th parallel, which is the home of the Ascended Masters. It's the Masters Retreat, an interdimensional group of elders that, you know, propagate spiritual advancement of the world. You know, like Mount Kailash is another powerful center there. But the next one would be the third eye, and that's up approximately 66 where the Arctic Circle is. So you have this projection coming out of the top of the, and then the crown is of course the North Pole, where you have the circulation of the magnetic field coming out of, just like in our own bodies, we have a positive and negative, and that flow of electromagnetism does this donut loop, and the same with the Earth creating this great expanse of electromagnetic energy that protects us from the sun. So, you know, that's the dance of that, the chakra system, that, you know, according to Peter Shampoo. There's many people that have developed other chakra systems for the planet that identify, well, this pyramid and that pyramid is this one, and, you know, the Tor is another, and Teotihuacan is another, and, you know, they kind of look at the surface of it. But I look at the planet as a Taurus energy, just like we are, and it would have these bandwidths like we do going through our body. From in our conversations, you question where the how the moon falls into this, and mm-hmm. And I kind of look at that as the moon as the Ba, which is in Egyptian spiritual dimensions, the Ba is where the soul resides. And if you were to hold your stretch your arms up straight above your head, the Ba rests about there at the end of your fingertips, and that's the moon out there. It's the soul of the planet transmitting its messages via the waters to the humans who are in a fractal resonance with the planet, transmitting through the Great Pyramid, which is tuned to water. It has the geometry of water implicit to it. So this is, it seems to me, this is how things operate, and how we can, as beings, relate intimately to our planet and see how holy its waters are, and see how holy we are in context to this. You know, it's just this wonderful gift we've been given, and it's just such perfection around this that it suggests that there is an intelligent design that we're confronted with. It's really undeniable. I mean, the placement of the moon, how that it's just so perfectly placed that we have eclipses, and there's this numbering system of 180, which is the number of chakras in the human. There's the seven primary chakras, but there's 108 chakras in total, you know, in your hands and in your feet and different joints and such.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's one of the teachings in Hinduism, and that's that 108 is a fractal of the 1080, so 1080, 108, you know, to take off a zero, and you got that number of the human chakra systems. And now, I suspect that there's 108 Earth rings around the planet. It's kind of my next project to map out all the Earth rings to determine which chakra is which, and you know, how the whole system works in concordance. And
I do have some questions about that, and the moon rings, the Earth rings, and the other planetary rings that are nesting within the circumference of the Earth. How would the shape of a specific planet choose an area to express itself on the surface of the planet?
Well, that's a big question, Jeff. Each continent has a certain geometry to it, and I think that each continent has its place in bringing certain qualities to the planet. And you can look at these different planets as organs, if you will. And the only, you know, truly circular geometry is North America, right? So, you know, that arc from Panama up into the Greenland and down through Iceland and the Azores, and that's the North American plate. And it has a generalized yin-yang form to it. So you would, you know, with Hudson Bay being an eye and the Bermuda Triangle being another eye, you have this spin dynamic that would, you know, suggest a bringing balance to the world, that North America has that potential to bring balance to the world. You know, likewise, another geometry that's really obvious is the Phi spiral of Africa. It has it's like the conch nautilus and the Fibonacci numbers and and the digits on our hands and the proportions of our face and body and such. That's all Phi proportion. So, you know, life came out of Africa. It had to be placed in that position so that it could relate to everything else in the world. And South America has a 3-4-5 triangle to it, and Russia, Eurasia has a kind of phi rhomboid to it, which is like a lozenger, a diamond shape. So I think these four forms relate to specific organ bodies that create a whole in itself that I haven't quite fully understand yet, but I see them there, and their energetic form is very obvious. But how they all interact, well, you know, book three, book four, book five.
This is really fascinating to me, because the 30 degree north and south on the planet and the moon's influence, I didn't know there was a band essentially around the planet where the moon's influence would be a little bit more pronounced. And that includes some of the bigger volcanoes in this stretch.
That the lunar max cycle, which was followed very keenly by the megalithic builders over in England. A lot of the stone circles are tuned so that they'll tell you when the lunar max is coming, and you know, there was something special that happened. And I think there's a torquing that happens on the Earth core during the lunar max. Usually the moon is rotating at a like a 5 degree off of 5 degree north, 5 degrees south of the equator. That's where it spins. You know, it turns around about every 18.6 years, you get the lunar max, and the moon strays 23.5 degrees off of that usual 5 degree angle. So it ends up being close to 28.5 degree of declination to the north and south. And the moon, looking at it in the sky, you know, comes way far north, and then the following day, the next few days, just plummets and goes back to it. So that there's this like drastic change in of the spin dynamic of between the Earth and the moon. And this torque, I suspect, is what's causing what's known as the vital vortices. There's 10 vital vortexes around the planet. One of them, most popularized, is the Bermuda Triangle. But that Bermuda Triangle, if you were to take those three points of Bermuda, Puerto Rico, and Miami, that creates a circle, if you will, you know, like a, you know, three points is equal distance is a circle, and that's the dimension of the Earth's inner core. And you go around the planet on this, you know, both north and south, in 23.5 degrees is right, you know, dead center in that Bermuda Triangle Earth ring.
It sure is. I'm looking at it right now. You're saying the circle that would be the vortice is related to the Earth's core?
Yeah, it's the same dimension as the Earth's core. So I'm thinking that there's this, you know, like the Earth is almost has this like photographic lens or something on its surface, and the energies from within get seared into onto the surface. So every 18, I suspect, I haven't looked at the statistics yet, but I suspect that every 18.6 years, there's activity within the Bermuda Triangle. So I have to look at historical records and see, you know, when all these disappearances happened and if they corresponded with the lunar max.
Right. Remind listeners of the significance of 18.6 years.
18.6 years, again, is the lunar max cycle. Every 18.6 years, the moon goes off of its usual 5-degree declination and moves 23.5 degrees off of that. It's kind of cattywampus. Here's a good example. You know, those toys that you know, with the pull string and the gyroscope?
Yes.
That's a real good example of what happens. You know, the Earth doesn't have the strength of that pull, so there's a kind of a torsion that occurs. It's just something that I'm feeling, that there's this torque that gives a tug on the Earth's inner core, which is also where our electromagnetic field is coming from, and that electromagnetic field is what drives the lay system. So the English people, the ancient people of Britain,
mm-hmm.
they needed to know when those extreme electromagnetic storms would be coming through the land, because it would bring beneficial growth to the crop. So every 18.6 years, you would have a bloom. You'd have more bees, you'd have more flowers, you'd have more plants and animals, and you know, it just when there's a lot of current, there's a lot of life. You know, when you don't have chemical fertilizers spread over everything, you kind of you gotta use what you got, you know.
Absolutely. I'm trying to visualize some of this as you're talking about it. I wanted to get into some information about a past guest. In an interview with Harry Hubbard, we talked about his work researching the well-known repository of ancient Egyptian artifacts located in a cave in southern Illinois. And what I found interesting was that the southern Illinois area was also known as Little Egypt or Egypt. And the region is bordered on 3 of 4 sides of the most voluminous rivers in the U.S., the Wabash and Ohio rivers to the east and south, and the Mississippi River, and it connects to the Missouri River to the west. Yes, where there's water, there's life, food, agriculture, and locations where humans tend to build around. However, could you talk about the role of natural geometry that may be also in effect here?
Yeah, you bet, Jeff. Yeah, that's really a real interesting part of the world. Where those rivers converge is, if you were to take the length of the Mississippi River, that confluence is at a phi proportion, right? So, 1 to 1.618, you know, the digit in your hands, all that consonantalis, all that stuff, it's all, and water. Water tends to be in phi. It has a phi proportion that it wants to create out of DNA. It's anything water touches, it informs its geometry. Where these rivers converge is at an angle, like where the Ohio meets the Mississippi, is at an angle of 104.5, roughly. You know, you have this meander, but the mean line of the meander of these two rivers where they converge into the main Mississippi River, just north of Tennessee, at the Kentucky-Missouri-Illinois border, it's at 104.5, which is the considered the bonding angle, the ideal bonding angle of water, where the two hydrogen bond to the oxygen is at 104.5. So whatever water touches, whatever water is involved with, it informs it geometrically. There's intrinsically three primary geometries. Well, there's four. There's circular with the molecules, the hydrogen and oxygen atoms creating a circular kind of matrix with two equal points off the side there. And those two equal points are two radiuses, if you will, common radiuses. And you can draw the vesica Pisces off of that, which is the bladder of the fish. It's the Gothic cathedral model. It's the eye, the vagina. It's like where life emerges from. That angle at 104.5 is very close to the heptagon, or the pentagon, if you will. So the pent nests right within that, centered on the oxygen. It nests right within the vesica Pisces, connecting the hydrogen. So you have the center of oxygen, the center of hydrogen, being the three points of that generates the geometry of the pentagon. So you find the pent in flowers, you find the pent as a human being. It's like everywhere in nature. And another geometry you see a lot is the seven pointed geometry in flowers and such. That's also there. And the Great Pyramid is implicit to three of the points of the seven-pointed heptagon. So that area of, where that convergence is, mm-hmm. speaks to water. So Little Egypt, they're calling it Little Egypt because it's part of the Moundville culture, the Hopewell culture, that had all these earthen mounds that the farmers who were working this needed to get rid of them because they were interfering with their maximizing their yield. Through the 1800s, they were knocking down these mounds, and thousands of them had the remains of giants at the base of these mounds, indicating that there was a culture of giants that flourished in this area, thought to be the Adena people. And they were big on copper, and they mined a lot of the copper up there in the Great Lakes. There are these mines that, centuries of copper came out of prior to the introduction of colonial civilization here.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah, big copper right out of the ground that's just pure. You don't, you just pound it into whatever you want to make it into.
Great.
So that's all part of that culture of the Mississippi River Basin. Another book I wrote as well recently is The Arc of Ontario, and that has to do with the Four Corners area. But there's this line that goes through the New Madrid Fault Zone. The New Madrid Fault was in 1811, went off. It's when it goes off, there's a 9-point on the Richter scale earthquake that occurs. Tremendous! It's one of the most powerful earthquake zones in North America, and they have all these plutons, these granite plugs pushing up through the ground there, right nearby this confluence. And this confluence is probably there because of this fault zone that's there. And, in 1811, the last time it went off, it made the Mississippi River flow north and knocked down chimneys up in Maine. So right now, if that were to trick off, it would destroy the entire, Memphis, everything. Multi-trillion dollars worth of damage would occur because there are so many cities along the Mississippi River right close to the New Madrid Fault Zone now. It plays into this conversation with the Trail of Tears and the Missouri Compromise. The Trail of Tears occurred when President Jackson decided to remove all the Cherokee people from the eastern woodland Indians to move them all off to Oklahoma, get them out of the way. So they gathered them all up and marched them out to Oklahoma. And there were five trails, and these five trails went north and south of this New Madrid Fault. I drew the pathway of these trails, which thousands of people died on from cold and starvation, being forcibly removed, the tears, the suffering of these people is all around this. It kind of looks like a bloodshot eye, with the iris being the New Madrid Fault. So this line across our country, the border of North and South Carolina, no, Virginia and North Carolina is that the 3630.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Missouri Compromise, and that was signed so that anything north of there was non-slave and south of there was slave. And to this day, we have this polarity within our country along this parallel, this 3630 parallel. And, you know, call it the, you know, I call it the sovereignty lay, or you can call it the slave meridian. But there's a lot of our country's karma, you know, tied up around the progress of America on the backs and suffering, the profit through suffering that occurred and still does occur, you know, as a, you know, primary means of livelihood here in America through, you know, wars. You know, I mean, we're in the business of war, you know, like it or not. You know, that's what fuels our economy. And, you know, the karma of all that rests right there at the New Madrid Fault, right there at that new Egypt, if you will. It's a big conversation in American consciousness and karma and power and fate.
Right around the between the fourth and fifth chakra, near the between the heart and solar plexus.
Yeah, and that's really you know, the fight between power and love is what fuels us as beings and can make us or break us.
And the other interesting thing is Little Egypt. Well, when you look at this particular area of southern Illinois and you run across the 30th latitude across to Africa, it's right there. There's Egypt right there. I mean, it's a little bit above, but it's right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right there and part of that that Moon River conversation.
A past guest, Crow777, had talked about something he caught on video called the Lunar Wave. And there are other sky watchers around the country who have also filmed this anomaly that looks like a wavy horizontal line. And it runs from bottom to top of the face of the moon. And it's commonly filmed during the equinox and solstice. Crow777 suggests there are many more components to the moon than the bright disk staring back at us. He references the work of Russian researcher Hadipo, who had written at length on alternative ideas of the moon's function and dynamic influence upon the Earth. And one of them includes the relationships and harmonics between lunar pyramids and the Great Pyramid along the Nile River and its place in priming world consciousness. Does this information plug into your research?
Yeah, it very much does. Yeah, I never heard of that lunar wave before you introduced me to his work, and I've been kind of working on one aspect of the moon with the full moon period of the moon when there's the greatest pull on our waters. During the full moon, there's more births and deaths, and you know it tends to be a menses cycle time. It's you know, all these, you know, the high tides of the planet, it's the pull of the soul to leave the body. It's all these things are associated with the full moon, the howl of the werewolf, the, you know, on and on and on. You know, all the mysteries that we give to the moon are, you know, about this full moon out there, the old man on the moon, the rabbit on the moon, these you know, what is this all about? You can, you know, the Swiss cheese. But in my research on the moon, I learned that when the moon is in its full stage, it's crossing through the Earth's plasma field, the wake of the solar winds, if you will, blowing across the Earth's magnetic field, has this tail that runs out and it has a pinch point and then separates again. So you have the solar winds, positive and negative, and they come to this pinch point and cross, and then it becomes negative positive. It switches sides. When the moon is within this magnetic tail, it has a charge to it. So you couldn't send the astronauts to the moon during the full moon, because during that time there's this tremendous amount of static electricity generated by the Earth's magnetic tail. Right, so the dust on the moon stands up about a foot off the ground. It's this, and everything is supercharged electrically. Walking across the floor, you have that the static shock, if you will. When you touch the knob, well,
mm-hmm, sure.
Imagine an astronaut out there with all his sensitive electronic equipment. It just wouldn't operate. So there's this this tremendous power that's being generated by the moon at this point, where it's taking this energy from the plasma tail and feeding it back onto the planet. There's a stream that runs the plasma sheet during the full moon, transmits this charge back into the Earth. On this period, you have this ability to transmit frequency from the moon to the planet. And in Hattie Bove, they speak of these Ebova who have this called the land management system, the Ebove land management system, where Hattie Bove talks about the moon having all these pyramids that transmit controlling frequencies to the planet.
Right.
The pyramid on the Earth is a frequency generator and transducer, if there ever was one. So there's this ability for the moon to transmit its electrical current during the full moon via the plasma sheet to the pyramid, that then transmits it to the waters of the planet in the witness of the Nile and its proportion, and broadcast it throughout the entire planet. So I get that what Hattie Bove is saying, that the Earth is, or the Moon is, this artificial satellite. There's so many things about the Moon, like the rock, the main body of the rock is this, titanium and molybdenum and all these really super hard metals.
Mm-hmm.
And the dust on the Moon is not of the same material that the rock of the Moon is made of. There's innumerable, X-file type photographs that have been taken on the dark side of the moon of all these installations. There are pyramids, there's domes, there's these mushroom-shaped skyscrapers, there's pinnacles, there's all kinds of these structures that are on the moon, which suggest the habitation. And I've come across this a number of different, there's a transmission from the Sasquatch that was received recently that described how we've had multiple different races that have tried to make it here. In Hattie Bove, they talked about the arachnids having control of the planet at one point, and then there were the bird people and the ant people, and now we're the monkey people, if you will. The Ebove land management system, we've been trying to, according to Hattie Bove, has mm-hmm. been trying to adjust the genome to create a more and more vehicle that's better able to hold souls, if you will, in a way that maximizes what their agenda is. And their agenda is an elitist agenda, where they want to have a certain population of the top million and billion being having souls and consciousness, and the lower 3 billion having none, so that they can be easily controlled and manipulated. So I can see that. I can see that conversation taking place here on the planet. The way the 1%ers and the 99%ers, and it really does make sense to me. I appreciate what Crow 777 had to say.
Yeah, there's a group of people really looking deeply into this and trying to catch the lunar wave and come up with some patterns surrounding.
Well, I think the lunar wave is occurring because of its, when it goes through the, when it goes through, see the tail, the magnetic tail, mm-hmm. that's coming around the planet and then zeroing out on the moon. It's the moon is either during solar max cycles when there's a real lot of solar storms coming through, that tail shortens, and the pinch point is between us and the moon. When the solar winds are lesser, the pinch point is beyond the moon. When that pinch point moves through the moon, I think that there's this tremendous wave of lifting of dust that happens as this pinch point goes across the surface of the moon and generates a wave of dust that we see rising and falling as it moves across the surface.
Would that correspond with the frequency of these people filming the lunar wave during a solstice or an equinox?
Yeah. I solstice and equinoxes are times when there's a specific torque on the and within the spin dynamic of the planet. You know, being equal distant to the sun having a more direct line of, especially the equinox. You know, with balanced days, it goes right across the and has a an equal shot at both north and south, and it could make more of a focused point of parallax, this kind of crossing of it's kind of like a magnifying glass creating that spot of light that ignites a leaf that you're playing with as a kid or something. It's like,
we're winding down the end of the hour here. I wanted to ask you, Peter, about if you could tell listeners about how past civilizations had harmonized with the Earth's sacred geometry and what that looks like.
Yeah, sure. The sacred geometry is the geometry of nature. And civilizations that have incorporated those geometries in their design, in the patterns of their culture, in the construction of their homes and temples and civic structures and their cities, those civilizations tended to last for 1,000 years, like, Greece and Rome and Egypt. It's those are the three prime examples of it historically that we have. Prior to them, I'm sure there were other civilizations. It appears as though a man has been in one shape, form, either as a bird person or an arachnid or
right.
Or some other, like a Bigfoot, the big people civilization, all flourished here, and you can't help but notice the geometry of nature, and the cathedral builders of Europe saw that, and they tried to reflect that within their structure so that the cathedral was an outgrowth of nature, that it had a resonance with nature, so that it would fuse Christ consciousness within the matrix of nature and distribute it through that frequency of nature, that frequency of geometry that permeates all of nature, that frequency of geometry that's in all water. It's in all our bodies. It's in the shape of who we are as beings. In modern society, where everything is modular and based on efficiency, there's a deadening to nature. If we started to design our houses more in keeping with these sacred geometries, with these geometries in nature, I think we'd have a greater sensibility to nature, and perhaps that's the reason why we don't have these things. Perhaps it is a Haiti Bove, the part of the Ebo plot to get us separated and dull us down and disconnect us from the consciousness of that permeates everything, permeates nature. The Native Americans speak to the nature being permeated with consciousness, and if we can be deadened to that, to consciousness, we'd be easier to control.
Peter Champeau, author of Moon Rivers, a geographic exploration of Earth's primary rivers. I really appreciate you reconnecting us to this sacred geometry and even further into understanding the larger picture with Earth's rivers and vascular system. Thank you so much for being on In Other News.
You bet, Jeff. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady.